It's football season. Actually, that's an accurate statement only in the sense that we have reached the time of year when the players take the field. In the U.S. today, it's always football season. There's the NFL Draft, now a major TV show, as well as mini camps, training camps, and preseason games. And there are injury updates, lawsuits, and police blotters dotted with NFL players. It has not always been so. As Richard Crapeau, a professor of history at the University of Central Florida, points out in his new book, NFL Football, A History of America's New National Pastime, the pro game was once a humble and not especially attractive alternative for guys who played in college and had nothing else to do afterward. Richard Crapeau, welcome to Only a Game.
My pleasure to be here, Bill.
The state of pro football in the early days is evident in the way the league felt it had to promote itself when its first real star, Red Grange, signed on in 1925. Tell us a little about the schedule that Grange and his team, the original Bears, endured to introduce the star to the public in various cities.
It was probably the most brutal schedule any football player has ever gone through. They played a couple of games in Chicago, then they started an Eastern tour, and I think the worst stretch was five games in 7 or 8 days, and there's just no recovery time. And Grange himself was required under contract to play at least 30 minutes of each game. So even when he got injured, which he did, he played through the injury. And by the time that initial tour got back to Chicago, he was really unable to perform. It was sometime, I think, in late November, early December. And then they restarted about Christmas. And they came south to Florida, went to New Orleans, and then out to California. But the schedule was much less rigorous. And then when it was all over, he had a good deal of money to put in his pocket.
You point out that in the early days of pro football, franchises disappeared fairly often. You write that Green Bay was the only small market team to survive the Depression. What was it that allowed the Packers to stay in business at that point?
Well, I would say that basically the will of the people of Green Bay. The team went out door to door selling stock in the team and trying to prop themselves up economically. And it worked. It didn't become the great, wonderful money-making machine, but they survived.
The NFL, like Major League Baseball, had a color line until after the Second World War, and foremost among those preventing black players from joining the league was George Marshall, the owner of the team in Washington, until his death in 1969. Yes. Numbers of other owners and general managers apparently wanted to employ black players. How was it that Marshall blocked that development for such a long time?
Well, it was interesting. You know, at the beginning, African-American players played in the NFL, and they played in the NFL until the early 30s. And then at a league meeting, apparently there was an agreement reached. Marshall had been lobbying for this, and he got George Halas and a couple of other people to agree that they would stop signing African-American players. No one remembers this. The participants don't remember. They all have amnesia on this issue. George Halas said he never had any idea that this was going on. But it's pretty clear that Marshall was the spirit of the operation and that other owners went along with him because, in fact, he was an important owner. That was an important franchise in Washington, and they were doing very well.
You identify former New York Jets quarterback Joe Namath as an especially significant figure in the development of the league. And it's not just because the Jets upset the Colts in the third Super Bowl. Tell us a little more about how Namath changed the way marketers and the American public came to think about athletes.
When he came to the Jets, almost immediately they began to refer to him as Broadway Joe. Mm-hmm. So they cultivated that image as much as they could. He started appearing in the media more frequently. The famous pictures of him in the mink coats. he was nightclubbing in all the most important nightclubs in New York. And it was an image designed to attract young people to the National Football League. And I think it did.
Among the most dominant personalities in NFL history was Pete Rozelle. He was the commissioner from 1960 until 1989, and his background was advertising, and as you point out, he was very concerned with the image of the league. But hasn't that continued to be the primary concern of every NFL commissioner?
Oh, absolutely. And I think we've seen that over the last month or so. It's always about image rather than substance. And Rozelle was a leader in that and was a genius at it, actually. He was really quite good as a PR man. And both Paul Tagliabue and Roger Goodell, who followed, Both of them learned at the feet of the master.
You point out that in 1985, there were 17 players in the NFL who weighed more than 300 pounds, and 20 years later, the 300-pounders numbered over 500. But tell us about some of the more significant ways in which the league grew over those two decades.
Well, I think really the growth is in terms of television initially, and it's a perfect television game. As television grew, the NFL grew with it. It's never quite clear whether the NFL needed television more than television needed the NFL, or was the other way around. But that's the start. Cable emerges, and then you move from there into the internet era. And then from the internet, we've gone to all of the mobile devices. And immediately, the NFL knows how to deal with all of these things and moves to exploit them. We may have seen in the last month that maybe now the whole thing's getting away from them. But in fact, the NFL has been nothing short of genius in terms of how to deal with the growth and development of mass communication in America.
Give us some sense of where you think the NFL is headed.
If you asked me that question 2-3 weeks ago, I would say things probably look pretty good. Right now, I'm not so sure. But the reason I think things look pretty good is that the TV ratings have just gone through the roof in the last 4-5 years. The most watched programs on television in the history of television have been like the last 4 Super Bowls or the last 5 Super Bowls. So there's no sign that anybody's backing away. The Ray Rice issue probably will pass. I think the biggest danger is the concussion issue and how people finally respond to that. But I think for the immediate future, things look really good.
Richard Crippeau is the author of NFL Football, A History of America's New National Pastime, and he joined me from WUCF in Orlando, Florida. Richard, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. It was really a lot of fun.
To read an excerpt from my review of Richard Crippeau's History of the NFL, it's a quick slant route over to onlyagame.org.